Welcome to another episode of Killing Time, hosted by two girls, one goth. And today is May 13th. It's the day before my birthday. And listen, I hate birthdays in general. I hate my birthday. I try not to celebrate it, but I don't know. The second episode of Killing Time just coincides with my birthday. We might as well make it some sort of a mini celebration, aka any excuse to have a drink with you two.
Absolutely. And we are going to lean in to this day.
Yes.
In honor, Jack, in all the ways we never thought we could, but we actually can, especially since we're recording in person.
I know. I have to make note that we are all vaxxed. I don't know if we mentioned that last week, but yes. We are completely vaxxed.
Yes.
We're all together. We also have been like three of the most careful people when it came to COVID.
Hypervigilant.
That we were each other's bubble. We didn't see many people outside of your working, my parents.
That's right.
That was the, you guys are the only people I've seen in the last year.
100%.
Up until recently.
Totally. Yes.
So it's great to fucking record in person and to celebrate, I guess, my birthday.
Happy being alive day, yes. Jacqueline. It's really a celebration for your mother, May, who I love dearly. Miss you, May. I know you're listening because you listen to all of Jack's projects. Yes. I wish my mom listened to our podcast.
Seriously.
But she doesn't.
We know May is so into Jack. I've never seen the devotion of a mother to a daughter the way that May is.
Daughter. Philly, that was good.
Uh-huh.
That
my
was
Long
great.
Island accent's coming through.
I love having you come out. Okay, well, you know what? It wouldn't be a first degree episode if we didn't get into the day. So, Billy, what day is it Tuesday?
That's
dark
right.
days.
Dark days.
This is a dark day. We're going dark. May 13th, 1981, Pope John Paul II was shot.
Ooh.
In St. Peter's Square in Rome in front of 20,000 worshipers.
Holy shit.
Yes. And, you know, he was the first Polish pope, and he broke, there was a 450-year tradition of having Italian popes. And he was shot in his abdomen. He was shot in his left hand. A few other people were shot. And a 23-year-old guy was a Turkish citizen named Mehmet Ali Agca was arrested. And he was part of this like right-wing Turkish nationalist organization called the Grey Wolves. But just days after the Pope recovered, Pope Paul, literally practiced what he preached, and he forgave the man. And in 2000, Pope Paul actually requested that the man who shot him be pardoned.
So when you say that the Pope requested that this guy be pardoned, are we saying, is this in an official capacity? Is this a courtroom, or is this under God he's pardoned?
No, he's trying to say, let this guy out.
Right. Wow.
And they corresponded. And
via, you know, prison letter or whatever?
Via, I believe they actually met in person at one point. And when you're looking at Mehmet and Pope Paul, you know, it was very much Pope Paul was practicing what he was preaching.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness, yeah.
Do we know why the perpetrator shot the Pope?
Yeah, he was part of this sort of right-wing Turkish nationalist organization type of thing called the Grey Wolves, whatever that, you know.
So it was some sort of radicalization that occurred.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yes.
We'll see a lot of that today. So
yeah.
We do, and we're going to revisit the idea of forgiveness in crime later on in this episode.
All right. Well, before we do that, we have got some bitching to do.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
All rise.
Call the first witness.
How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
All right. So this section is called On the Stand, and it's a time for us to bring our unpopular opinions or controversial stances on things, or like a hill that we want to die on, to the group. And then we're going to vote on, is something guilty or not guilty at the very end. I love this because there's so many things that I've been ruminating on that I fucking hate, that I have nowhere to like air my grievances.
100%.
So who wants to go first? Billy, do you want to
lead the charge?
Off? Yes, I'm going to lead a charge. I was driving around Ohio and a song came on the radio.
Oh, no.
And it's a song that I actually really, really like.
Okay. Wait. What radio station are you listening to? Are you listening to alternative? Are you listening to classical?
I don't know. It was local radio because we did not, you know, in the rental car, we did not buy Sirius or anything like that.
Well, but usually that is Christian or country.
Yes. Sure. Mm-hmm. This was Let Her Cry by Hootie and the Blowfish. Let me say this. It is a fantastic song, and while I was listening to Let Her Cry by Hootie and the Blowfish, I was thinking, this could be a Cure song.
Okay.
So, saying, let her cry if the tears fall down like rain, let her sing if it eases all her pain, let her go, let her walk right out on me, and if the sun comes up tomorrow, let her be. That is a song right out of, you know, those lyrics are right out of the Cure discography.
I don't know. It sounds like a Beatles song to me. Just let her be. Let her be.
So wait, are you on this? Are you in defense?
I am in defense of, because listen, you know, one of those bands that it's kind of like Nickelback. People make fun of Nickelback.
Everyone loves Nickelback.
Nickelback is fucking laughing all the way to the fucking bank.
Yes.
They're so rich. So is Darius Rucker.
Uh-huh. So and Darius Rucker does those corporate gigs all the time. But what I'm talking about is that Let Her Cry is actually a
Cure song.
A neo-goth song.
So, but what is your stance?
My stance is that he is not guilty, and the Hootie and the Blowfish are not guilty of being a punchline.
No one, no.
Yes, no, this is true. People do think Hootie and the Blowfish is a punchline. I don't know why, but I will jump on board with this because Darius Rucker has transitioned into country music. Mm-hmm. He is an extremely successful and an extremely talented country music star. I fucking love him. His songs are incredible. So I am in support of this.
I love that.
Oh, do you have any thoughts, Alexis? Or she's just pouring herself an Aperol spritz.
I'm pouring more Aperol into my drink. No, I'm with Billy in that the person he talked about with this song is like the Beatles. And...
I mean, the passion that he says when he's like in the breakdown... When it goes, and then he goes, she went in the back to get high. I sat down on my couch and cried, yelling, ooh. Oh, mama, emo. Please help me. Won't you hold my hand?
Listen,
oh, my God.
There was, I don't know if this is a meme I saw or just a post about how music has completely forgotten about the lyrics.
Yes.
Like, there are not many songs out in today's age where the lyrics fucking... Oh, they just like kill you like they used to.
They stab you in the heart.
They really don't. They really don't. Mm-hmm. And you look at old lyrics. I mean, even something as like innocuous as that song that you wouldn't have ever thought of, when you actually listen to the lyrics of, it's pretty moving.
I'm moved.
Yeah. You know?
All right. So, verdict.
Not guilty. Love Darius Rucker.
Wait, you didn't want it to be able to... You didn't want it to be guilty?
No, he's not guilty.
Not guilty. I yes. go with that.
Yes. All right. And this is a call out to the Cure and Robert Smith. Please cover Let Her Cry by Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, that would be a good cover.
Awesome.
I love that. I'm going to go next. So,
excellent.
You know, in celebration of my birthday, on the stand today is the adult birthday week.
Ooh.
I am prosecuting it. I, like I said, I hate a birthday. They're just, it's another day. I don't like the attention on me. So I've never really understood the need for a birthday party and the presents and the whole thing. Right. So I have a problem with adults that celebrate their birthday week.
Sure.
Because if you are an adult, we all have a bunch of shit to do. You know, we have our jobs. A lot of people have kids.
Responsibilities.
They have responsibilities.
Deadlines,
taxes, husbands, in-laws, the whole shebang.
Your health. Your deteriorating health.
Or your mental health.
For the love of God.
So to demand a whole week out of somebody's life to celebrate your day of birth, it seems like a lot. You know, you only, in my mind, if you're going to celebrate your birthday, I'll give you one meal. I'll give you a brunch. I'll give you a dinner. But that's about it.
Yeah.
I also have a problem with birthday gifts as an adult.
Yeah.
Anybody that demands a birthday gift as an adult, it really rubs me the wrong way.
It's weird.
If you, like in your soul, you find something. Alexis has done this for me many of times. She's seen a gift or she's seen something online. She's like, oh, Jack would really like this. Yeah. It really struck her.
Yeah.
To give as a gift. It's not always. It's not every year. This last Christmas, you gave Jared a gift without giving me a gift.
Sorry, Team Jared.
But that's the thing. If a gift comes to you.
I also got no one else anything. I just got Jared a gift. But this also plays in her whole thing where people think me and Jared are together. It's a whole thing.
There was a comment on the Facebook group about it. I saw that.
It was so good.
But that's the thing. It's like if a gift strikes you, then I feel like it's good to give. Mm-hmm. I feel like the obligation. The obligation is my problem when it comes to birthdays yes. and gifts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like an adult should not feel obligated to another adult for some weird reason like that. Like if you feel like you should give somebody a gift, if you feel like you should celebrate them, great. But it shouldn't be this daunting thing, especially a birthday week.
Okay.
And the monetary aspect of that is not the problem. It's the time.
It's the time.
And that's the thing. It's like, I'd rather go to a dinner and pay a ridiculous amount of money and pay for a dinner than have to shop for a gift.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing. Like usually the dinner is the gift, right? Like that's fine.
No, your presence is the gift.
The presence is the present, if you will.
It really is. It is. Their presence is the present.
But I love that about our friendship group. Like our friendship group really isn't based on that. We buy gifts when you see something and it strikes you. And that's when you should buy gifts. I mean, we also
gift is a gift. It's not an obligation.
No, I do agree with that. When I see something and I'm just like, wow, you know what? Like,
it makes you think of somebody.
It makes you think of somebody. It's just like, I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
And that is the spirit of Christmas, really, when it comes down to it. But no, what I'm saying is like, that is the spirit of, the whole idea of like, okay, it's this person's birthday. You've got to get something right there. I agree with that, especially, you know what? And as somebody that was a summer baby who had his birthday on August 2nd, and then no one would show to his birthday party because everybody was at camp.
Jesus, Billy, stop with that. Mine was December 2nd, which is right after Thanksgiving, okay, and everyone's out of town.
No one's out of town.
Guys,
December 2nd.
It's my 2nd. Birthday.
Make this about you, Billy.
You know what? December 2nd, really?
Really?
Yeah,
no, December birthday 2nd's sucks.
Brutal.
Sucks. No, nothing that's... The only thing worse than a December birthday is a January birthday. There's nothing
worse. Everyone spent all their money in December.
Because everybody spent all their money.
No, my dad's birthday is January 15th.
Oh, my God.
Nothing sucks more than
that. The reason why, like, if you ever want to throw a party at a catering hall, like, throw it on, like, January 7th.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway.
So, anyways, birthday week, nobody deserves it.
No.
I don't care who you are.
No.
Guilty.
Guilty?
Question mark?
Right?
Guilty?
Wait, what was the actual...
You're the worst.
Birthday week, Alexis.
Oh, fuck guilty. That. Fuck that birthday week. Fuck you if you want your own birthday week.
All right, it's guilty as fuck. All right, Alexis, your turn.
All right, mine is less intense than last week. Elon Musk, I realize that was a layered topic. What I'm talking about this week is a simple, common sense choice. So if you don't agree with that, questionable ethics. And... mental capacity. But in your mask wearing phase in the pandemic, we all have a mask. We've all had to wear masks.
Yes.
Don't care how you feel about that. We've had to. I have made the choice where I wear a chain.
You have? Yes. You've done this. You've done the necklace. It attaches.
It's what our grandmas do to our glasses, their glasses. They put a little chain link on each side.
My mom also does this.
It's
with her
so
mask.
You can wear it around your neck and you can put it on your face when you have it, and you're not like shoving it in a pocket or on your table. It's gross to have a mask on a table or in your pocket or lost, worst case scenario, and then you have to go home and get another one. So I would do this thing where I was wearing a chain on my mask, and I heard very polarizing responses to it. And I was surprised that no one saw this mask in the same value I did.
So you're bringing to...
In defense of the chain.
In defense of the chain for
the mask.
The mask.
You know, and I will say, watching Alexis with the chain, I would be like, while we were shooting, I'd be like, should I get
traveling.
Should I get a chain?
We were on to make it look cool.
She didn't make...
She made it look functional.
She made it look functional.
No, we'd be on the plane, right? And you have to eat a snack and then put your mask back on.
Yeah.
And it was like, you lose your mask if you take it off when you're on the plane. Like, it falls between the seats. It just is so convenient to have this connected to your body. And in fact, I saw Kendall Jenner utilizing such a chain on her Instagram.
Okay.
So that was after I made it cool, but
she also gave a Pepsi to people, and then they stopped protesting. So that was good.
Billy, we're talking about the chain.
We're talking about the chain. Alexis is a trailblazer.
She is.
I love that so much. It's not like my mom has been wearing the chain on her mask for so long.
Hear me out. Women have been wearing the chain on their glasses for quite a long time.
No, it's not a new thing whatsoever.
No, but it's disparaged, and I'm here to change that.
Okay, well, the fact is that once people are going to get on board with it, all of the mask mandates are going to be lifted, and we're not going to have to wear masks anymore.
I appreciate your positive outlook. That being said, I would prepare for the worst, expect the best.
Yeah, I'm really shooting for the stars right now.
Yeah, expect to be wearing that mask, and if you're going to be wearing that mask,
damn it.
Sorry.
Yes, put on that chain.
And
it could be a cool chain too.
Dude, I have several. One is like chain link.
Yeah.
One is it's got a Bollywood vibe. It has like little iridescent circles with like a very tight chain.
So you match the chain to the outfit.
To the vibe.
Listen, I support it for you.
Thank you.
I support it for my mom because my mom is a very staunch mask wearer. Like she's double vaxxed, but she needs to double mask on top of the double vax. And also sanitize every single thing that comes in her hands.
All the things.
However, for a normal person, like I can put the mask in a pocket. I can put it in my purse.
No.
It's fine. I will not lose it. You lose things.
Ooh.
So I'm going to say mask chains, guilty.
Not guilty. I'm going to do them.
Mistrial. We're bringing it back in a later episode.
Mistrial.
What? Why not guilty? Thank you.
Not guilty because it's functional.
It is functional.
And I see her doing it's functional. And I've actually been a little jealous.
Okay. I just don't think it's necessary.
Billy's saying it's because Kendall Jenner did it.
Thank you, Kendall.
But I do drink Pepsi because of Kendall Jenner.
Okay. Okay, so when we come back, Billy is taking us back in time for a true crime rewind.
True crime.
Yeah, it's rewind time.
And that brings us to our true crime rewind topic, and it relates to the day. I'm talking about forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Challenging for all involved.
Yes. Now, the Pope was able to forgive his would-be assassin, and the dictionary defines forgiveness as to stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone for an offense, flaw, or mistake.
Uh-huh. Have we all dealt with this in the past?
I mean, forgiveness is a hard one, right?
I
feel like everybody deals with it completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hard-headed? Are you not?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hold on to grudges?
Uh-huh.
I feel like everybody deals with it differently. How do you deal with it, Alexis?
Not well. Not well. Where I'm a super sweet... I'm very nice.
Yes.
But if you fuck me... I'm very hard to forgive. I'm very hard to like get over it. I have like a jealous streak. I have
spiteful.
I don't let go of grudges. I have this like grudge streak. I'm super authentic about it because it's like, I don't know. Maybe certain people have the luxury of not having to have grudges.
Not
That's
you.
Not me. Nope. Don't
I
fuck
see it,
me.
I see it
well,
spewing
Jack,
in your brain.
You know me.
I do
fuck my friends over.
No.
I really don't. So I'm a good friend. I'm a good family member. I'm a good partner. So if you fuck me, like if you, Jack, were a friend who fucked me over, which you would never. I mean, we've been friends for 15 years almost.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen a lot. But if someone fucked me over, it would not go well for them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't get fucked over. I don't fuck people over. But if they did, it's like, oh, shit. I
my brain would explode with trying to process it, and it probably wouldn't end well.
I am the same, very similar in the fact that, and I've dealt with a situation recently where somebody has done me wrong, and I'm like, I have not.
Who?
Not had to deal with this in a very long time because I don't have people around me that treat me bad. And I'm the type of person that I'm not much of a forgiver. It depends on what the offense is, but I'm not much of a forgiver. I'm more of a
cut the fucking losses.
I don't hold a grudge because I don't like keeping people in my life that have done me wrong. It's kind of more like a switch has flipped. You've done the thing. And now you're cut out of my life. And then that's kind of what it is. And then I move on with my life. I'm not a holding on to grudges, letting it affect me, like with if it was an ex-partner, lurking in Instagram, trying to like plot revenge, like one of those kind of things.
Or it's even more talk through it more. You're similar to me. You're just like, I'm good. I'm closing the book on this.
Also, it's like, I think it comes to like the kind of people you have in your life. If you have a good, you know, round of people in your life, you have good friends, you have good family, you don't need to hold on to somebody so hard that is not treating you the way that you should be treated, whether that be a partner, a friend, a business partner, whatever it is. So
100%.
How do you deal with forgiveness?
I'm going to ask you ladies though, what happens when it comes down to murder?
What? Ooh. In what context?
Well, we're talking about murder. We're talking about somebody that has, you know, we're talking about the Pope.
The fact that if a friend did me wrong, I wouldn't forgive them, I do not think.
Yeah.
No, my feelings on murder, and that's why I get baffled by our jobs in the true crime space. I get baffled by prosecutors, judges, defense attorneys' jobs. Trying to quantify the type of punishment someone should have for taking a life, which you could not fucking begin to imagine what that life or who that life could have impacted. It's impossible from a philosophical standpoint.
Yeah.
Like trying to understand how I should punish someone for taking this life. Okay, what if that life was Benjamin Franklin? What if that life was Barack Obama? What if that life was George Floyd? Like, you can't quantify the kind of impact any life will have on society. And then trying to, most of it, I'm talking specifically from like a civil suit standpoint, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm going to sue you for wrongful death.
X amount of money, yeah.
How would you quantify the most ambitious of lives, any of the three of us? Or
But like, also, well, how could you quantify somebody's life over another person's life? Like, that's also comparing two people's lives and which is more valuable is fucking insane as well.
It's disgusting and awful. And listen, I'll get onto this topic, but look at Europe, right? They don't punish people for murder the same way they do in the U.S.
Yeah.
In Europe, their rehabilitation rate is like a lot better. Mm-hmm. And they get like 10 years, 6 years, 15 years for like crazy murders and shit. And they reintegrate back into society. But like the loss is insane. So huge. Like, you know, if anyone listening, if you had someone murdered, like the loss is life ruining for several people.
It's insurmountable for sure.
And it's just like, you can't ever begin to punish someone for what they took.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about the Manson girls when it comes to forgiveness and when it comes to parole, because we know that the Manson murders happened 50 years ago. And the women who took place in the Manson murders are still up for parole many times.
Right.
They've gotten parole, and the governor has actually said, no, you can't have it. You can't get out. Particularly Leslie Van Houten. So what do you guys think of Leslie Van Houten? Now, she was with the Manson crew, not at the Tate House, but at the LaBianca House. She actually held down Rosemary LaBianca. She stabbed her, apparently, but she said that she was already dead when she stabbed her. She went to trial. She was the youngest woman condemned to death. The death penalty was reversed in California. She's been recommended for parole for 4 times, blocked each time by the governor, most recently in November of 2020. She was 19 when she did this. She claimed that she was under the influence of LSD and obviously under the influence of Manson, who controlled what they ate, how many drugs they took. Should she be let out?
I'll start.
I say hard no. I'm very sorry for her that the climate of the 1960s, 1970s created this atmosphere where she felt rebellious enough to cling to a psychopath and do whatever he said. And I'm sorry, if you're going to hold down a woman being stabbed who's already dead, like, I think that says something about you, like your ability to do that.
Do we also know if she was actually really dead or if she was just saying that she was really dead?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. A woman being alive and stabbed or her being dead.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like you're changing the story sure. to fit your narrative. Mm-hmm.
Irrelevant, right? Like, I don't have the stomach to do either.
Fuck no.
At any age in my life. So I'm just like, I'm sorry. If you can get there, you deserve to be locked up. You, like, if you can get there, if you're like, someone's dying, I'm holding them. Someone's dead, I'm holding them. I agreed to this plan. You know, we may have harsher sentences in the United States than we do elsewhere. That being said, I struggle with this because there were so many brutal murders of those who were very innocent. And I'm sorry you were 19. Your array of choices led you there. And you fucking helped murder innocent people. And it's not like, ooh, I poisoned them. Vicious stabbings you witnessed. I struggle to see the, like, forgiveness out of back here.
It's not a passive...
not passive is a great way to put it. It's
bystander kind of thing.
Yeah, you were involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And every, you know, it seems like four times the parole board has looked at this woman who seems like a sweet old woman 50 years on, and they've said, yeah, let's let her out of jail. And then the governor each time has said, no, she's not getting out of jail.
Just like hard no.
Nope.
No way.
But listen, some of it could be political, but that's also okay. Sometimes, listen, you get caught in the crosshairs. The whole idea of our justice system is like, are they precedent-setting cases? Are they, you know, cases that in hindsight you have to have people stand by? And I think this is one of them. It's like Charles Manson. A lot of people think he's a serial killer. He's never actually killed anyone himself.
Yeah.
He's commanded people
to
do it.
He might have killed Donald Shorty Shea, who was a guy that actually dropped dime on them, and that's the reason why they did the raid at the place in the first place. But he was, you know, you're right though. He did not kill anybody at the Tate or the LaBianca house.
Well, that's the thing. It's like everybody that is not extremely familiar with the case thinks that he killed all of these people himself.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, yeah, we can't always look to the definitions of these crimes to decide whether or how to condemn people. But, you know, he commanded people to commit these very heinous, bloody, brutal, painful, suffering murders. But the whole Charles Manson aspect is moot, really. We're talking about Leslie Van Houten, or whatever her name is.
Houten, yes.
Sure.
Close enough.
Leslie Van whatever. She wants forgiveness. But from a philosophical standpoint, it's like, that's not really up to us.
No, and it's up to, at the end of the day, you like to look at the family.
Yeah.
And the family of Sharon Tate has, even though she wasn't involved in the Sharon Tate murders, like Deborah Tate has said, no way. You know, so, and it was that whole cabal of people. So if they're saying that, I gotta agree and say, you're not getting out.
You don't get to fucking kill people and take everything they could ever do, everything they would have ever done, everything their children would have ever done. Like, the magnitude and the philosophical aspects of, like, what you take is just, like, stay in jail.
I'm trying to excuse your behavior for X, Y, and Z. Like, there's always going to be an excuse for somebody for some reason, right? You can always find it. So it's, at the end of the day, that doesn't replace what loss you have caused at the end of the day. So it's
not only that, what the world lost, what their families lost, like the implications and the butterfly effects of those losses are ever to be imagined, you know? And I think we can't forgive for that. You should never be forgiven.
No.
You can live with it. You shouldn't be forgiven for it.
No. So on the topic of forgiveness, we want you to think about the worst thing that you've ever done. Would you forgive yourself?
No.
So come back after this message and you can decide for yourself.
You are a horrible person. What's the worst thing you've ever done?
We are back and we are delving into the worst things you have all ever done. And we sent out a call to action. We're going to send out another call to action. We want you guys to call us and email us.
But most importantly, call us.
Mostly call us. You can email us if you're going to send us a voice memo. We want to hear your voices. We want to hear in your own words the worst things you guys have ever done. So you can send us a voice note to theworstthing@thefirstdegreepodcast.com or ideally, you'll leave us a voicemail at 323-539-3516. Voicemails are key, best case scenarios for us. So please do that if you're so willing.
And listen, I know that some people are scared to leave a voicemail or a voice note. So if you must, and if your story is this good, you can write us.
Also, leave a fake name. Disguise your voice. Put on a fake mustache. Let your voice and your sweet, sweet story be muffled through said mustache. Lie about who you are. If you did the bad thing that you've apparently done, you can lie about this.
And listen, if you feel so bad about the thing that you've done that you need your voice to be changed or altered, we will do that. Just leave us a little voice note.
And if that's the case, you should also look inward. But anyways, we're going to move past this, and we're going to play you. We have a voicemail that was left for us. We're going to play that for you, and we're all going to deconstruct that together.
Great.
Stand by.
Hi, my name is, and I'm calling to tell you an hilarious story, and I'm glad you're accepting the voicemail. About 26 years ago, I was single, and I was dating this guy. His name is Bruce, extremely intelligent. Made a lot more money than I did at the time, and he kind of spoiled me. But the thing is, he would take me to these beautiful dinners, and he would take me to the theater and do all these things, but he never would sleep with me. And so the night of my 26th birthday, he took me out to this nice dinner with all of my friends, and he took me back to this place, and we're on his couch, and he had poured me a glass of wine he didn't drink. So I'm very drunk, and I go in to kiss him, and he pulls back and he says, "I think that you want to have sex with me." And I'm like, "Yeah." And he says, "You know what? I'm just not really into you. I care about you, but you can have sex with anyone. You can only make love with a few." And, you know, fast forward, he was 100% right. We just didn't have chemistry, but it didn't matter. My ego was hurt. I had to sleep off the alcohol. And the next day I go to work. And then that evening I had a show. I performed community theater. And afterwards, my girlfriend and I go to the bar and we're drinking and I get really, really drunk. And this is where the important part happens. Well, the embarrassing part is that I make a phone call and I am calling Bruce, but I am drunk. Do not let your friends drunk dial. So I call up at the phone and it goes to voicemail, and I say, "Bruce, I just want to tell you that you're fucking quick and that I'm beautiful and you didn't know what you had." And I just on the phone. So fast forward, weeks go by, and I realize I probably shouldn't have done that, but he didn't call me back, so I figured he got the hint. And I'm crossing the parking lot towards my car, and I see Bruce in the distance. And he's waving to me, and I'm a little nervous, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to address the phone call. And he's like, "Hey, Michelle, I haven't seen you. I actually flew back to Seattle to, take care of some business stuff. But I just want to let you know that you still have a box of stuff at my house if you want to come by and get it." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure." I say to him, "So you haven't been home for the last couple weeks?" He's like, no, I just flew in this afternoon and I'm going to go home." I'm like, "Great." And then I start to sweat as I'm walking back to my car because I realize that he has probably not heard his voicemail. I don't know if he was calling. I mean, this is a voicemail day where you could call and check your voicemails, but I don't think he did. And in fact, I know he didn't because I get a phone call that evening when I get home and it's him saying, "Hey, got your message. Why don't you come by my work and pick up your box of stuff?" So yeah, humiliated. Here's the thing. Bruce is a really nice guy. And about 10 years ago, he found me on Facebook and we reconnected. We're still friends. Bruce is a bajillionaire now. and he's married to the person he should be married to, and I'm married to the person I should be married to. And so it all ended well, but please do not let your friends drunk dial, but I guess in modern days it would be drunk text. Do not let your friends drunk text or call your friends. Okay. Love you guys. Bye.
Oh. We're going to call our beautiful anonymous caller. We're going to call her M. M.
Wait, by the way, M did leave us her first and last name not only once, but twice. Yes.
And M, we have your back, so we're not going to out you in that way. Also, what you did was not bad.
No.
Because, you know, sometimes the person is not the person, your person.
Yeah.
And I know you said you're married now, but you did mention how Bruce is now a
trillionaire?
Maybe a bajillionaire. That has to hurt.
I mean, but listen, I stand by M's decision. You know, when you got to let somebody know what they're missing out on. Mm-hmm. I don't care how drunk you are. You're just speaking your truth.
In vino veritas.
Totally. In wine, there is truth. Is what Billy is saying.
Yes.
And you better believe I've had several of these calls. I'm not paraphrasing Michelle, but here's what I would say. I'd be like, motherfucker, I am so good. I'm so hot. You fucked up, bro. Like, that's the kind of shit I would say drunkenly, hypothetically. I haven't.
Hypothetically.
But I would if I felt I had been wronged in any sort of way.
Yeah, hypothetically, I would text something of the sort, maybe a little bit more aggressive to like five different people over the course of my life. Hypothetically, I would have done that.
Hypothetically. Yes.
But that's the thing. It's like, this was 26 years ago. There was no texting.
Yes.
It was all about leaving the message, leaving the voicemail.
I mean, that's a full circle moment. And I was thinking there is a Seinfeld episode that this is very similar to. Everything comes back to Seinfeld in these parts.
Dude, mm-hmm. It's why we have a Costanza Sansa. It's why you've named me the George of your life. It's why we have so many parallels to Jerry Seinfeld.
So the episode that this reminded me of, it was an episode where George was dating this girl and she wronged him in some way. So he left this really shitty message on her answering machine. And this is where I thought the story was going to go, where he went and he was like, I got to switch out the answering machine.
I got to switch out the tape.
Because back in the day when there was a tape, you could physically switch out the tapes.
That's
absolutely.
There was no unsend. Not that there's an unsend right now in text messages. We wish there were.
God, I would have been spared a lot of embarrassment.
A lot of embarrassment. But back in the day, there was an unsend, which, you know, consisted of you going and stealing somebody's property. But that is what happened in the Seinfeld episode. I literally, when we were listening to that story, I'm like on pins and needles being like, and then she went to his apartment with him and she switched out the tape before he saw it. And now they're married happily ever after on his fucking yacht somewhere.
Honestly, Michelle, you also sound beautiful and happy.
She does sound happy.
And you know, I think sharing this is indicative of how happy and removed from this whole thing that you are.
Yeah, that's very true. Yep.
You have also a nice voice. You should consider like voiceover or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe starting a podcast. I don't know.
Maybe a podcast. Yeah. Call me.
One of those things.
Yeah.
I love this story.
It's same. I'm fucking here for it. Also, it reminds us, it's like they don't all have to work out. You'll still find your person outside of that situation that was totally botched. They might turn into a billionaire, but you could one up them and make 1 billion more. So
it's really easy.
Doesn't need to be a thing. Cool. So to expand upon our the worst thing you've ever done segment, again, we want to reiterate, we want the voice notes, we want voicemails, but we will take
a very creatively crafted fucking email.
Sure, or just one where you want to die when you read it, which is what this is. So I'm going to read this as we received it. I saw on Facebook how you want cringeworthy stories, and I've got one. Due to the work I am involved in, I'm not going to say what it is because I want to protect her identity. I do not want to put that publicly for Facebook to see. A couple of years ago, we were short-staffed on a weekend that I was scheduled to work. I was asked to stay back at a funeral home and catch walk-in families, calls, etc. Well, we had about 4 different families walk in within minutes of each other, and the phones were going nuts. Help the people in the order that they walked in, one of them being there to pick up their mother's cremated remains. Mm. Cremains is what they're called. They brought their urn elsewhere and asked me to put the cremains in that urn. Our funeral home policy is to not put cremains in any urn that the family didn't purchase from us.
So they brought an outside urn.
It's like in Big Lebowski when he gets the...
Yes. And there's an extension to this statement. We broke one years ago, and the family made us pay for it.
Yes.
So due to that liability, we stopped doing this altogether. Since I was there by myself that day, no one would know that I took it upon myself to go ahead and do this, going the extra mile and helping this family out.
Oh, no.
Good for you, girlfriend.
Oh, no.
I took the cremains and the urn back to the office and then got flustered when the phone kept ringing and more people kept walking in.
It was a busy day. Busy day.
Cremains abound.
Cremains abound.
And maybe half of their mom's cremated remains spilled onto the floor. Maybe more than half. ? A carpeted floor.
Oh, no.
I could not pick it up. I did try, but to no avail. Then I got my shoe and rubbed the cremains into the carpet until it blended in.
Oh. Wow.
Or the naked eye would not see it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's where we crossed over from an accident to...
So
what?
To the worst thing you ever did.
Brave yes. soul who is sharing with us, and we commend you, by the way. She still works there. I cringe so hard every time I put myself back in that situation. Every time I walk into the office, I'm reminded that this woman's cremains are buried in this carpet. Someone is missing half or more of their mother, and she is on the bottom of my shoe.
Oh my God.
And in the carpet. It's awful, and I pray I don't go to hell.
Wow. Well, you know...
Can I start?
Sure. I mean, go ahead.
Because I got nothing.
Speechless.
I love you for this, and this is a mistake I would make and that I would try to bury because it's accidental. It's rooted in anxiety and people-pleasing, and it's accidental. There's no malice here. And it turns into a bigger situation than it should have been because you didn't, like, cop to it. But there's no reason to cop to it.
But then if you cop to it, then what?
It becomes a bigger problem. So you actually did the right thing. Mm. Like, oh, what are you going to tell this person? Some of your mom is in my carpet. No, you did the right thing.
There's no way out of this.
There is no way.
And it's all, you're right. It's not rooted in malice.
It's rooted in an accident and then the fear that stemmed from there.
How many times has... anybody that's listening to this right now, like, accidentally knocked over a cup on a table? I mean, it's really the same kind of thing.
I'm so flattered you think that's the most benign thing I've done. I've done tons of accidental shit.
No, I'm saying that's how accidental it was for her for accidentally knocking over the urn.
Okay, but why, you know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate here. You have these ashes on the carpet. Why sort of double down and just... rub them in the carpet. Why not try to pull them?
How?
Buy a brand new vacuum cleaner that has nothing else in it, and then suck them
Billy,
up and then bring them in there.
Billy, what? Because you have to involve your boss. You have to. It becomes a bigger problem. And like I don't agree with you pulling up a bunch of junk
in the carpet. Carpet is fucking disgusting.
It's really disgusting.
It's also symbolic. Ashes are symbolic. They're fucking dead. It's symbolic. Like, oh, really? There's some spilt out. She's supposed to get a brand new vacuum cleaner on her funeral director worker's set. Like, come on, Billy.
Listen, what's worse? You having half of a clean ash or is it worse to suck up a bunch of dirt, grime, bugs, junk, disgusting shit from a carpet and then add them to the ash?
Clean ash.
Right. Well,
clean
ash. Let's ask the listener.
Yeah, please let us know. We'll do a poll on Instagram.
Dude, I love this woman that she even remembers this and feels bad about it. I love her because it's...
No, that is mortifying. It really is something that
accident.
You're like...
It's an accident. It's an accident.
But it's still mortifying.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? She's paying enough. She remembers every time she walks into work.
Yeah.
And the fact that she feels bad about it means she's an amazing person. Because most people... There are people out there who kill people without thinking about it.
Most people spill some inanimate ashes and feel terrible about it.
Most
people are out there just murdering people.
I'm saying she feels bad about ashes, which means she's a good person.
I, 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 would think that most people would feel bad about ashes. I mean, that it, as symbolic as that is.
Girl, we love you. I will spill hella ashes in your defense.
I mean, don't feel bad for not vacuuming it up like Billy said.
Ignore this man who doesn't even own a vacuum. As I tell you, I've never seen Billy clean a thing in his life.
First of all, I own a vacuum. I actually own two vacuums.
So. Don't believe you.
Two vacuums? That sounds like a lie that somebody with no vacuums would say.
I have two vacuums. I have a floor vacuum and I have a little hand vacuum.
Right. You know, there's no better way to end this episode than with the George Costanza of my life telling a little poem of sorts. So we're ending with the Costanza stanza.
It's really just a way to look at your life. Okay. And you can interpret this any way you'd like.
Okay.
Hi, my name is George. And most times, my body's engorged. Can't do a whole lot. Can't compose a thought. In my college diploma, it's forged.